Welcome to this late afternoon session about taking SQL Server into the realm of spatial data management. My name is Michael Rees. I'm a program manager in the SQL Server Engine team. I have been working together with Ed Kadibau, who unfortunately could not attend TechEd this year and instead sent me this external hard drive as his stand-in. It contains lots of spatial data, so it's all his knowledge is packaged in here. And I have been working with him on spatial data. Among other things, I've been doing spatial indexing in SQL Server 2008, and I have been the scenario owner for Beyond Relational in SQL Server 2012. So let's start quickly and talk a little bit about what I will be talking about. So this presentation will cover both the old and the new spatial capabilities. It is okay if you haven't used spatial yet, but if you have, then I hope there is something new for you as well. How many of you have used SQL Server Spatial in 2008? Okay, about 50%. How many of you have used SQL Server 2012 Spatial? Okay, that's almost one person there. So basically, I also will quickly go and talk a little bit about spatial indexing. Unfortunately, that presentation had to be swapped out against something else in the pre-con phase. So I moved some of that material into this presentation to make sure that we cover at least some spatial indexing. And the key takeaway that I would like you to take home and focus on during the presentation is how comprehensive the solution is that we are providing, how easy it is to use, and that it is actually quite performant. So, of course, there's lots of business opportunities nowadays. I would wager that probably we have about 50 to 60 people here in the room. I would wager that we have at least 100 GPS devices in here, either in your laptops, in your iPads, cell phones, etc. There's lots of spatial data management going on. Lots of people are now gathering spatial information about where you are, where things are, and be able to do mapping, be able to do business analysis based on that, etc. So that's why one of the reasons why we added spatial support, obviously, to make that easier for you. So now let's switch over to my database. And I hope that the databases now are running. I had a little bit of a problem earlier. So the first thing I do is, since Spatial Ed here is on this hard drive, I have to attach his knowledge to myself. So I'm basically attaching two spatial databases that I'm going to use in my demos. It's now starting up. Come on, come on, come on. I really need to get a new laptop, I told my management a few times. So while this is starting up, let's see what happened here. Maybe it just decided to not do it. Okay, so let's add geonames, and let's add the sample database here as well. And let's attach these two. Should be only a few seconds. And while this is going on, I will open a file that I prepared with some queries. So this query here is using what we call the GeoNames database. This is a huge database, about 44 gigabytes of data on this external hard drive. And it contains a huge table with GeoNames. So let's do a count star here just to kind of see how big that actually is. And it will take a while because there's lots and lots of data in here. It's basically geographical information, point data primarily, from across the world, talking about what are hotels, what are convention centers, pools, etc. Yes, please.
Where did you get that data?
I got it from Ed. there are some public places available. I will get to it later a little bit. Some of the data I have here are, for example, census block data. You get that from the data.gov U.S. Census Bureau site. You can also get much of the data that is freely available on things like the Azure Data Mart. So you can download spatial data there as well. And then there are lots of other places. So as you can see, the query is still running. I hope you believe me that there is lots and lots of data in that table. And so we can interrupt this and make a little bit of progress. So as a teaser here, what I will be showing you is basically a simple visualization of the data that is around us. So this database contains, among other things, restaurants, hotels, pools, parks, amusement parks, etc. And what I will do is I will basically write a query here that takes the longitude and latitude of the convention center here in Orlando as provided by Bing Maps, and I will find all the restaurants, hotels, and the amusement park type things in a radius of 3 kilometers around our point here. Now, remember, this is data that is not containing every single restaurant in the world. So, for example, the one that I was at yesterday apparently is not in the data set, but it kind of gives you an idea. So what I'm doing here is just running the query, and then I will kind of tell you a little bit what the query is actually doing. So what you see here is basically a union all of many select statements. This is like building up your spatial visualization in a spatial environment. You basically build layers. So every query is a layer. The first layer is where we are at. Then I add all the restaurants here. And what I do is I basically put a 3 kilometer buffer around my point, and then I intersect it with all the objects that are restaurants inside my feature table. And then I do the same for my hotels, for my pools and parks, etc. I have a couple of feature codes that I'm going to reuse. And then finally, to visualize the 1 kilometer ring, I also add a difference between the two buffers by, so that I have like this 1 meter kind of ring that I will be showing you around it. So, and now if I go into the spatial result here, so SQL Server, as you probably know, has a spatial result tab that for spatial results allows you to actually look at what the result is. And it gives you here the ability which spatial column you want to look at. At the moment I only have one, so it shows me one. I can put labels on it, so I have the name label. And then if I have geography data, and I will talk a little bit more about what that is later, I can also select what projection I would like to use. And at the moment, I'm using basically equirectangular. I could, for example, change it to equator. Now, the thing is if you look over here, you see a lot of dots. These are these buffered objects that I put out, and you see the circle of that buffer that I created. Now, if you look closely, in the middle, of course, is where we are at. And then you have kind of along the road here that you have outside here, the International Drive, you see all the hotels, restaurants, and some of the parks here kind of clustered to it. So it kind of gives you a nice visualization of where the data actually lives. And if we zoom in, you would actually see, for example, that the Orange County Convention Center is in the middle, the Peabody is here, and the Rosen Center, if you zoom in a little bit more, is back over here. So you kind of see how easy that is to actually get some interesting insight into spatial data. So let me switch back and continue with the presentation. So of course there are lots of spatial data scenarios. Yes? That was all point data, yes. Of the dot? Let me quickly show you. Basically what I did was, so the question was, how do I get the size of these things in different sizes? Every one of my queries here added a buffer of a certain size, and I chose different sizes for the different types. So I used the 75-meter buffer, for example, for hotels, and the 25-meter buffer for the pools and parks. So I cheated a little bit. If it's just point data, you would see a small, smitchy dot that even zoom it wouldn't allow you to see. So that's why I put the buffer around it. Okay, so let's go back here and continue with the presentation. Before we do that, let me quickly try something else here because the kind of the next demo depends on it. Yes? Okay, that worked. So... Now, there are different types of spatial data, both in terms of where they come from, like what we have here is real estate development, customer, financial analysis, government-based, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Most of you probably have your own spatial data that you want to work with. So there are two types of spatial data. If you go to Bing Maps or Google Maps, you have raster data primarily, which is basically the map, the satellite imagery, et cetera. SQL Server can store raster data, but it doesn't know anything about what it's in it. It's just the blob. So that's kind of good to know, good to store, but not very good to operate on. And then there is the more interesting spatial data, which is the vector data, which is basically the type of data that we manage inside the database specifically. Now, what are some of the vector data that we have? We have points, multipoints, line string, multi-line string, polygon, multi-polygon, and collections of those. These are the things that we have supported since SQL Server 2008. In SQL Server 2012, we are adding a couple of new capabilities to that by adding some new types that we will show in a minute. And then I already mentioned what raster data is. So some of the new things that we have in SQL Server 2012 are circular arc segments. Now, they are very interesting because they actually allow us to represent curves or circles, et cetera, with much less space usage. Because instead of having to, like, put every single dot in my circle to kind of make a circle to appear out of, like, basically a very multi-sided polygon, what I'm doing here is now I actually can just identify a few points to make that circular arc. Now, the other thing that we did was we added support for the circular arc. So all the operations that you know, like buffer, like intersect, et cetera, support circular arcs. And not only that, they actually give you additional capabilities, such as if you do a buffer of this triangle, you now have two buffer methods. One buffer method that gives you the standard kind of polygon kind of thing, where the curves around the spikes there are still basically polygons, and a buffer with curves, which gives you the ability to basically give a curve back there, which is, of course, again, much more precise. And I think we are probably the first commercial database system that gives you support for circular arcs on an ellipsoid. And that's quite interesting because ellipsoidal data is actually even more kind of prone to imprecisions if you are representing a circular arc using points. Because if you do that, as you can see, the yellow kind of line string that you see here is basically the line string that has four points on the globe, while the circular arc is the red thing which kind of follows the longitudinal axis. Or latitudinal axis. So you see kind of how this actually gives you much more precise ways of capturing information. Some other features that we... Yeah, sorry? So the question is it just geography or also geometry? And the answer is it's both. So you can get all these new spatial behavior or spatial shapes in both of the types. We also added a few new methods to the geography type. So a few people complained about that some of the methods that we had on geometry were not available on geography. And now all the methods that make sense on geometry are now also on geometry. Of course, SDX doesn't make sense, so it's not added. Another thing is that we now accept invalid objects for geography. And we have a make valid that gives you the ability then to make them valid. So that's another addition to 2008. Question. Yes? So the question was, what about if I'm having the ring orientation wrong, so to speak? Can I fix that? And the answer is no, but. And that leads me to the next thing that we are doing. In SQL Server 2008, one of the limitations that we had was that your geography object could not be bigger than a hemisphere. Doesn't matter which hemisphere on the globe, but it couldn't be bigger than half the globe, basically. And so in SQL Server 2012 now, we add support for objects that are bigger than a hemisphere, including a full globe object, which is basically showing you everything. Now, this is interesting if you have large environmental studies, for example, where you, for example, want to represent the ozone layer. In this case, the ozone hole is a little bit of a triangle. But it basically gives you the ability to represent things that are bigger than a hemisphere. Now, how do we do that? That goes back to the question that the gentleman asked earlier. It depends on which orientation the ring is. And if it's in one direction, it's basically describing what is outside. And if it's going the other direction, it's describing what is inside. And don't ask me which one. I will tell you later because I'm left-handed, so I always confuse the stuff. Yes? No, so I get to 3D. There's no 3D support except for that we store 3D coordinates. So this is, but then we have a reorientation operation that allows you to switch it around if you're not interested in. Another thing that we did was we increased the internal calculation precision from 27 bits to 48 bits, which gives you much more precise calculations, which will have some backwards compatibility implications. And Ed has a blog post out that kind of tells you when you might run into some issues with backwards compatibility around that. Another thing that we did was we now allow you to persist a computed column of a spatial type or with a method on a spatial type. So that gives you the ability to calculate spatial objects out of, for example, point data that you have already stored inside the database. And we have introduced spatial aggregations. So we took the spatial aggregators and polished them that we had on CoPlex and moved them into the product. And last but not least, we added a lot of indexing capabilities as well. So let's look a little bit about how we create spatial objects. And this is the same in 2008 and 2012. So assuming I have my latitude, longitude position, I can create the point by one of the constructors. I can then add a buffer around it. So that's kind of what you have seen me doing in my demo earlier. I can do queries on these objects with, for example, getting a distance of a certain, or do an intersection between two spatial objects, etc. So I can do really relational queries. And it looks like relational queries to me and probably to you as well. Now, we already mentioned that we have geography data and geometry data. So what is exactly the difference here? Well, there is a Flat Earth Society that hasn't quite died yet, and so we need to support them as well, even though I think the Earth is round now. And so we have two types. The geography type is the round Earth type. It follows a geodetic model of the Earth. It has ellipsoidal coordinates, which are the longitude and latitude coordinates that you get in your cell phone and GPS devices. And it allows me to store also the C value or elevation and an M value or milestone value if you have one to provide. And so you basically use these coordinates to define your objects, and it accounts for the curvature of the Earth. Now, what that means is that we have great circle distances, for example, between objects. It also means that the amount of calculation that is being done is quite complex. It's not just Euclid. It's actually quite more complex than that. So it's a little bit more costly. We also have the geometry data type. The geometry data type is for flat Earth. And I was only halfway joking in terms of kind of people still living in flat Earth societies. Most of the state coordinate systems in the US and in other places in the world are assuming flat Earth because the surveyors, when they were doing that in the 18th and 19th century, they didn't have much of the advanced math yet and the GPS coordinate system stuff to figure out where they were. So they were basically doing very clever things to map it to flat coordinate systems based on some projection. And so lots of that data is still flat and represented. But it has other interesting aspects. It allows me to, for example, do layouts of this conference center, because here curvature isn't really important. It also allows me to deal with making much simpler math, etc. So let me give you just an example. Let's assume I'm Columbus, and I'm traveling from Portugal or Spain down into to China. And I know from some early maps, etc., that, yeah, the distance is like this. Let's assume this is the kind of part of the map that he had. And so he was calculating, measuring that distance and saying, I need that much food and water to get there. Well, the problem is, actually, he's doing the great circle arc. So actually, the distance that he's traveling is the second yellow line. So you can imagine that after about three quarters of the distance, he will run out of food and water, and people will start muting. And actually, if you look at the history books, they were running out of food and water just before they reached Cuba or wherever they were in the Caribbean. Now, in the terms of spatial formats, of course, a spatial object is something that you can nicely visualize. But there are different civilization formats. One is the well-known binary format. Now, I don't know, but this is not well-known to me. And I don't know who can read that. There is a second one, which is well-known text, which is already better. I can read that, and you probably too. But these are both standardized, so that's why they're probably well-known. And then there is a standard XML format called GML that we also support, or a subset. And so we allow you to basically create objects out of these civilization formats, plus creating visualization formats out of your spatial data. If you have KML, which is Google's format, then you will have to do a transformation to and from KML, either using a well-known text or GML or some operational way. Yes? This is also supported in 2008. GML as well, yes. We even added the GML object in 2012 for the full globe object because GML doesn't have that yet. Another thing is that we can represent, of course, simple objects, but we can also represent really complex objects. Spatial data type is internally implemented as a CLR UDT, which can be up to 2 gigabytes in size of its binary object size. So this is wetlands up somewhere in British Columbia or so. And you can see this is only the beginning of the geometry collection well-known text. And so I can show you now basically how big that actually is and how much space it's going to take in my database. So now I connect it to my other database. And so let me quickly open that demo file. And let's go through some of the things that we discussed. So one thing that I would like to show you here is, let me go into SQL Spatial. For example, here I have time zone data. And the time zone data, if you look at it closely, you will notice that this is already projected to a certain coordinate system, so there is no projection here. So that's a geometry type. And another thing that I have inside my database here is that I have the states of the from the US. So I can visualize that very nicely. Now, this is, again, geography data. So I can project, and you can see if I use a Mercator projection, Alaska is almost as big as the whole of the US. And a Robinson projection or a Bond projection are kind of more accounting for the curvature of the Earth in the way that it's being represented. I also have the US counties here. So let me run this. And if I look at the US counties, one thing that is really visualizing interesting is that if you look at the kind of visual in indication, you don't have to look at the data in minutia detail to notice that the surveyors in the United States got more lazy the more west they went. Now, let's look at the counties here in the state of Florida, since we are in Florida here. And so I basically just visualize this. And we will use those counties later in some of our queries. So that's why I'm showing you that. Here's another one. I'll jump over that. That's just another point of parks in the area. So now let's look a little bit about circular strings and compound curves, etc. So in this case, what I do is I create a circular string. So it's almost like a line string, except for that I say circular string. So I run this. I take a look at it. And you see now that I have this circular string here that is kind of curved. Now I can create compound curves. Compound curves are like polygons. And they can be compounded by normal line strings, which are these things where you don't say anything. That's unfortunately the standard. I would have required you to write line string. The standard doesn't. Circular strings, and you can combine them. And if I run this, you will notice when I visualize it, that happens if I press F5. So if I look at this object here, you will notice it actually looks like a rectangle. Well, why does it look like a rectangle? Because I'm here, of course, on a curvature of the Earth. So basically, I'm following the longitudes and latitudes with my lines because they're just between two points here. So I can also fill this and make the compound curve that I have here into a polygon by just wrapping it into a curved polygon. So if I look at this, now the content is filled, so now I have a curved polygon. Now let's do something a little bit more complex. Now let's overlay my circular string and my line string that I showed you earlier on my globe. So they are now overlaid, and it looks like something is making a hop here. Now, if I change the projection to bun, you actually will notice that the, and let's add the label here, you will notice that the line string is kind of this internal thing that kind of jumps back and forth, while the circular string is following again the kind of circular arc here, the great arc on our geodetic object. Now, I can show you that existing operations work. So what I do here is I first I overlay these two polygons, curve polygon and my polygon, just to show you visually that they are kind of overlapping but not quite. And now let's do an intersection of them and create a new intersected object. And it looks like it's starting to rain. So, and again, I go back to the bond projection. And you notice that I now basically have cut off these pieces that were like not overlapping. Now, the interesting part is if I look at my textual representation, so I now get back the well-known text with STS text, you will notice that I actually still give you back curve polygon, compound curve, so I'm still knowing everything about that this is still an object. So I'm giving you a much more precise representation. Another new operation that we added is shortest line distance. It's an operation that people have requested. So let me show you here. I have a line string and a polygon. And I will visualize you the line string, the polygon, and the shortest line. Now, the shortest line operation doesn't have an ST in the beginning. So this is not a standard operation, but one that we have added to make it easier for you to operate on. So now if I visualize that, you will notice that down here is my polygon, here up here is my line, and this is the shortest line here. And you notice that the shortest line is hitting that line string somewhere in the middle, not on one of the points that I have specified, which is exactly what I would like. And then you can calculate the distance, et cetera, so you can do lots of cool stuff with that. If you want to do the distance, yes, it should be the same. We could take a look at it if you want to. So let's see. Probably have to add some more stuff up there. So that's copy that over and say what is the SD length or what is the syntax again? Let's see if that works. And then the other one would be a dot SD distance at B. And that must be SD distance like this. OK, and then we have to add here two null values to make SQL happy. Let's see what this does. Yes, it's the same number. Good. So let me see if I have any more queries to show or whether we go back to the presentation. Yes, aggregates. So let me show you some aggregates here. Again, I have my counties that I've shown you earlier, and they have population information. So maybe I want to kind of see what is the population difference between the counties in the state of Florida between 2000 and 2001. So I get one row per county, and if I visualize it, I see this here, and it's a little bit interesting that the data is there, but it's not that easy visualable. So let me, for example, now aggregate it. I want to see it at the state of the Washington level area, state of Florida level area. So what I do is I do a union aggregate, which means I combine all these different objects into one big object, which should be the object of the state of Florida, and then sum my populations, of course. So now I'm getting one row back, and now I have one state, and now I can look at the population. So in 2000, it was 15.98 million, and in 2001, it was 16.34 million. So that was before they had the housing bubble burst here. Apparently. Now, what I can also do is, I can also do, for example, an envelope aggregation. Now, an envelope aggregation is basically just taking what you see here and puts an envelope around it. Now, since Florida is this rectangular shape, almost as a as an envelope, kind of the envelope looks like a rectangle in this case. Okay, so let's go back to the presentation and continue. One interesting point is, so we talked about the circular arcs and the geography type considerations. So a circular arc is basically going around the inside. And if a circular line string encloses an area, a curved polygon can be created out of it. Now, the coordinate pair order is important, as I mentioned. And here is the order now given. The set of coordinates is ordered according to the left foot rule for exterior rings. Now, if we do spatial operations, as I mentioned, it really looks like a SQL predicate using standard CLR store procedures. The ST prefix is the standard, are the geospatial standard operations that you can find in other environments as well. The operations that we support are union, intersection, difference, and symmetrical difference to kind of create new objects. You can use intersects, contains within, overlaps, etc., to test how two objects relate to each other. You can construct new objects. Buffer you've seen. You can also do reduction. Buffer with curves is something we added. And numerical operations like length, distance that you just have seen me use as well. Now, the new spatial methods that we added in SQL Server 2012 are the following. We added all the curve-related operations and the shortest line two operations to both of the types. And we added valid, make valid, contains within, overlaps, and reorient object to the geography type as well, and ST convex hull. Now, the new methods for circular arcs are interesting. So we have this buffer with curves, for example, for this line. And now I, for example, want to actually say, let's exclude that. So let's just change the order. So I can reorient the buffer and basically make it to be covering the whole globe. And again, this is probably, we are probably one of the first database systems, and definitely the first one among our major competitors, that give you the ability to have circular, have geography type data, geodetic data that can span the whole globe, and you can do all these interactions with it without major problems. So I already talked about creating data. Now we can take existing data and kind of translate it. So what you see here is assuming that my table already has a latitude and longitude column, I can create now a persisted column of the spatial type. Or I can just, for example, create one and update it. Now, when I create objects, I normally provide numbers. So if you go back here, you see that number, 4226. It's one of these other well-known numbers, so to speak. This is called the spatial reference ID, or SRID. Each spatial object has one. The SRID is kind of like the locale for spatial objects. What it does is it gives me the coordinate system. It gives me what are the measurements. Is it meters, inches, miles, etc.? It gives me a projection semantics that is being used. And if I'm a geodetic type, it gives me the geoid dimensions, because the geoid dimensions will then have an impact on what math I'm applying when I create like area calculations or distance calculations. To make sure that we are giving you the right semantics, we are only allowing you to combine objects that have the same SRID. If you try to combine objects with different SRIDs, you will get a null value back. Yes? So the SRID, the question was, how does SRID kind of relate to the projection, et cetera? And the SRID has nothing to do with the visualization that we do. The SRID has to do with what are the mathematical backgrounds that people have used when they acquired the information. So for example, if I use the US GPS system, they make a slightly different assumption about how the Earth is looking compared to, for example, the forthcoming European GPS satellite system. And so you capture that, and then you make sure that you do the right math. Yes? So the question is, can we do SRD conversions? And the answer is, we don't do that. That's something that we refer to our partners like ESRI, Safe Software, et cetera, that have these manipulation engines that allow you to do mappings between different SRIDs. Problem is that it's a lot, and we are not necessarily staffed and in the business of keeping up to, on speed on all these different mechanisms. So another thing is the SRIDs we default. The default that we do for geography type is the WGS84 SRID, which is the 4226. This is the one that is being used by the GPS devices. It impacts on geography type, it impacts operational semantics. And we therefore only support the ones that we have predefined, because we need to know what is the math that we have to apply. We support 391s. 390 we already supported in 2008, which are the ones that are predefined by the European Petroleum Survey Group. And you have a kind of a method, a catalog view that gives you that information. And in SQL Server 2012, we added one new one. And it's our own. So this is a specific SRID that simplifies the shape of the globe to a spherical globe, which makes the math on it much simpler and more efficient. And it happens to be the same kind of shape that, for example, Bing Map assumes. So it gives us now another ability to, for example, if you don't really care about the exact kind of positioning on the globe, but you are fine with a spherical globe and you need performance, then that's a way of eking some additional performance out of your system. And in the case of the geometry type, the default is zero. In the case of the geometry type, the SRID is completely user-specified. You can use whatever you want, because flat geometry is flat geometry, is Euclid. It doesn't change. Whether you're doing it in meters or feet, the kind of math stays the same. Now, if you want to combine meters and feet, you will have to do the translation yourself. Yes? Yes? Oh, so the question is, if we do an integration with Bing Maps, for example, through reporting services, should we use the new SRID? You can. I think it might be giving you a slightly more precise result based on the map there, but most cases it doesn't make that much of a difference. Now, if I have, of course, I don't want to walk around, use my GPS device to capture all the data, so I basically want to convert existing data into spatial data. Often, I already have spatial data inside my database, but the spatial field is normally called address, city, zip code. And so there are services that allow me to take addresses and convert them to points, like longitude and latitude. They are called geocoders. And also zip codes to polygons, for example. There are lots of web services out there. Some of them are free. Some of them you have to pay, like Bing Maps has it, Google Maps, Yahoo, OpenStreetMaps, ESRI, et cetera, et cetera. That URL that you see down there has a list of those available. You can go to spatial devices, like GPS device, camera, phones, Bing Maps, spatial wiki, et cetera, to create your own object. Now, Spatial Wiki is a cool tool because it allows you to basically create polygons over the map, etc. So that's pretty cool. You can do aggregation, like what I've shown you earlier, or you can get additional data. Now, many of the official government data, especially in the US and now also in the UK, is free. But you have to ask your local government. Some governments think they have to charge you additionally after charging with taxes on that. There are some open source maps that are basically doing crowdsourcing to create maps that you can use to get free data. You can buy it. ESRI, Pitney Bowes, Navtech, Teleatlas, our own data market environment, etc. They're all selling you. And there are lots of resources on the web where you can find what's called shape files to load the data. So most of this data is represented in shape files. So the question then is, how do I load the spatial data in? And there are a couple of loaders. SQL Server itself does not provide loaders per se. But there are some open source, free tools like Shape2SQL that I'm using in the demo in a minute. And it gives me the ability to basically build, just load these shapefiles into the database. A cool side note is that this tool is built using our own redistributable spatial library. The spatial library that we use inside SQL Server is also available as a .NET library, and it supports all the operations that you have seen except for spatial indexing. And it has an additional builder interface that allows me to programmatically create my objects, etc. There's also a map point add-in for SQL Server that is freely downloadable but needs a map point, which is not free. There is Safe, probably the most, one of the two most advanced systems are Safe Feature Manipulation Engine, which now has a smaller, cheaper form that you can integrate with SSIS for about $500. And the SRI ArcGIS, which is kind of the granddaddy of them all, and can do probably everything you ever wanted to do in this context. And then we have Pitney-Bow Easy Loader as well. So let me go and show you a little bit more about SRIDs and data loading over here. Oops. So here is the SRID table, and I just select the top here. And you will notice it's 391, and if you look at the 391s, it's the authority name is Microsoft, and the authorized spatial reference ID number is something about above 104,000, which is the official kind of use at your own risk kind of numbering scheme. Okay, so I also promised you to show the large object. So in this case here, I have this large polygon that I shown you earlier. And I show you now that the length of the well-known text is almost 1 megabyte. The size on disk, the data length of the object itself, is 648 kilobytes. And the object looks like this. So this was actually a small object. It was not reaching even 1 gigabyte yet. And this has so many points that some of our competitors already have problems with doing anything with it. And just to show you here the circular strings that we talked about earlier. So here is a circular string on the globe. And you can kind of see it, so I add a buffer to it. Now the buffer basically looks like this, if I get it. So I do this buffer around it. And now you can see I have this sausage here. And now if I want to basically get the sausage and reorient it and get everything except the sausage, I do the reorient that I had earlier. So you see here, reorient object. And if I look at this, now you see that the sausage is much smaller. So now I have basically covered the whole Earth here. And I can change the projection to bond, so it makes a little bit more, looks a little bit more like a globe. OK, so now let's do shapefile loading. I have over here Shape2SQL. And I have some data here that I have from a shapefile. I looked a couple of years ago about H1N1 data because I wanted to make sure that I'm not getting sick when I travel. And so I found some data online, and it has almost 9,000 point features in it. So what I'm doing now is I'm basically loading it into my SQL spatial database, and I'm loading it into my table name here. I don't want to have a spatial index created. I don't need the ID column because that's getting automatically created up here. And I assume it's a planar geometry for now, and it replaces the existing text file. And so now I upload it to the database. So as you can see, it's loading it pretty fast. But since I'm impatient, I already have created a table earlier, which is called H1N1. So you can see it's the 9,000 columns here. And if I look at the number of data that I have in the US, it's almost 5,000, which happens to be the limit that I can represent here in my spatial result viewer. And so you can kind of see The points here kind of are clustered in certain places, but it kind of looks like the US outline here. It's not HIPAA data, yes. It's basically data that gets reported, got reported to the CDC. Now, let's look at the state of Florida data that we had earlier, which was the state of the counties. And let's combine that with the county data. And let me make sure that I'm actually visualizing my plan here. And so I'm running this query now, and I basically get all the cases that were happening in the state of Florida. Now, you can see the query took about 3 seconds. The plan here, just to show you, is actually, I think, is it using a spatial index? Looks like it. Yeah, so it's using a spatial index. So I have a spatial index created. That's why it was a little bit quicker. And if I do the visualization, you kind of see that there are lots of dots here all over the map here. But since that's like 3 years ago, we don't really care anymore. So we are fine. We're not going to get sick. Now, let's assume I wouldn't have an index. So let's quickly drop that index. And if I run the query, oops. Now it's going to take a little bit longer. And so I would like to run a query on this. Now, I loaded this as geometry data. Geometry data doesn't have a boundary. So for my index, I need to provide a bounding box and to be able to make clear that the queries are inside the bounding box. Now, what do I do to get the bounding box? Well, I could say I do the bounding box over Florida. But maybe I want to run queries over all my US data. So what I do is I basically create my bounding box around, for example, the envelope points, to kind of make sure that I really have a bounding box of the US. So it took like 34 seconds. So I basically calculate that. This gives me the bounding box of the US. And now I create a spatial index here with the bounding box parameters and with the gridding set to all high because I have point data that gives me the most efficient index normally with point data. As you can see, the index was created very quickly. Now I run the query again. I just already did it with the index, so you will see that it's about at least 10 times faster than before. In this case, even faster because now the data is preloaded in the buffer. So this is pretty cool, I think, in terms of what you can do with indexing as well. So let's switch back to the presentation and continue. Yes? Okay, what would happen if points were outside the bounding box? This is a very good question. You would still find it. But what happens is, and this is the way that indexing operates. Maybe I first explain how indexing operates, and then I go back to your question. So spatial indexing that we have built in is built in into the query engine. It's using a grid-based quad-tree index structure. And I'm not able to go into much detail here, because otherwise we would be kind of overrunning the time. But some of the important aspects are that if you have a geometry type, then you have to provide a bounding box for your index. Now, any object that is within that bounding that bounding box then gets gridded into basically multiple subgrids. Now, if I do an index lookup, is always done in a way that I first apply a lookup into these grids and kind of do an approximate query. Does this object actually fit into that grid or not? And if it's in the grid of the other object, then there is a candidate, and then I have to actually do the actual investigation using the method. Now, if my object is outside the bounding box, then it's in this special cell called cell zero in the index. And every object that lives out there, and if my probing object or my probing window is in that, hitting that cell zero, I have to compare every object in that cell zero, because every object in that cell zero is going to be a candidate. So it basically means if you hit the cell zero object, you're going to get really bad performance, even though you have an index. So make sure that your query window is always smaller than the bounding box. And in that case, you should be fine in terms of not having to hit that cell zero. Now, the optimizer actually determines the cost-based query plans to do that. Now, some of the performance enhancements we've done in spatial application SQL Server 2012 is that we added persistent computer columns. It's definitely a way of getting you more performant access to certain properties that you might want to create. We already talked about the new SRID, and we improved the implementation of many of the operations. So, for example, index creation for point data is four to five times faster because we improved our point data management performance inside our methods. The point data queries, therefore, are also faster because the point operations are faster. The SDBuffer operation we optimized as well, and we made sure that it's using less memory. We had a few people with complex shapes. When they added a buffer to it, they ran out of memory. That might still happen, but it should be happening less frequently now. And we basically improved our secondary filter step in our indexing environment by optimizing some of these and some other optimizations we did. We also added a new indexing scheme and new hints to make your query faster. So one of the things that we have the default kind of gridding parameters that we give you. That if you just say create spatial index, you get a default. The goal of the default is to give you not the best index, because that's not doable, but something that is close to something usable. Now, in SQL Server 2008, we kind of think we hit it with the framework that we had in place at the time, but the predictability wasn't very good. So it could be that one query window, it was really good. In another query window, it was really bad. It just averaged out. So in SQL Server 2012 now, we added a new default gridding mechanism that we call the auto-grid, and that which gives you a much more precise kind of default that gives you more predictability in terms of the performance of your queries against different query windows. Pardon? Yes. Yes. Yeah, so the SQL Server optimizer normally, if you have highly selective predicates in the relational context, often will decide that the relational predicate has higher selectivity than the spatial index, and will use that.
Has it changed in 2012?
The actual optimization techniques haven't changed. And so it heavily depends upon the statistics that you have on your index to make that call. And I don't think it has changed that much. Of course, the auto-grid index will have a different statistics than another index might have. So we would have to look at the data in more detail. But one of the things that we advise people to do is if you have a highly selective relational predicate, then do not depend on the relational index to optimize the query ahead of time, but assume that the relational predicate will be applied first. But that's cost-based, so we would have to look at the data, really, to see.
Is there a way we can hint to use the spatial query first?
Yes, you can hint the index. If you have two indices, you can hint the order of the index. You can have the spatial index first, in which case it should be taken first. So you can have spatial index either first or last in the width index hint. And that should help you. Yes. Yes, by hinting the order of the indices. You can say with index, and then you hint the spatial index, and then afterwards you hint the relational index. Okay, let's go back. Another thing that we have done is we have given you the ability to now specify the window grid density as a hint. And I'm kind of referring to some of my further reading, so to speak, that I have in my related document slide that will give you a much more in-depth explanation of how that works, etc. We also added spatial index compression, and we improved our index-aware query plans. So, for example, one of the most frequent queries is nearest neighbor, find me the nearest XYZ, and that will give me the ability then to basically find something. And in SQL Server 2008, we were not using a spatial index for that. So we told you to put a big enough buffer around it to an intersection with that. That would give you an index. And then you would do a top query to order by distance to find the things that you're really interested in. Now we are actually better, and we recognize a nearest neighbor query pattern to actually give you that performance. So let me show you how this looks like. So I'm back here on my Orlando data set. And so let me find me all the restaurants. Let me find me the top 20 restaurants here around my convention center. So what I do is I use, again, my data set. In this case, I actually have spatial index defined. So let me add the query plan here to show you that. And I will run this query now. Now, while the query is running, I would like to point out a few things. First, we recognize only specific query patterns. The query patterns have to use a top in the select clause or the fetch first row clause that we added new in SQL Server 2012. We have to have order by, of course, over distance. And we have to have a distance is not null inside the relational predicate. That later part is important because in SQL Server, distances, ordering of null values will be ordered first. And that's definitely not what you want to have in your result, and we would not be able to support that with an index because we don't index null values on spatial data. So we kind of expect that to be there. Now, if you do that, you notice this is a really large data set that I have, and this operation would have taken minutes to run. Now, it took me 11 seconds to run, and if I look at the execution plan here, you will notice, again, that over here, it's using a spatial index here. So it says here, clustered index seek spatial. So I'm actually getting a pretty good performance using that. So let me now conclude with a few remarks about the status of spatial in Windows Azure SQL Database, or what we used to call SQL Azure. I'm sorry for our marketing guys. They always need to make the names longer. So SQL Server 2008 spatial support got added already in 2010. Now, SQL Server 2012 extended spatial abilities are already partially available in the Windows Azure SQL Database today. And the reason why that is because we merged the code bases. So they are using the same code base. However, we only support the capabilities of SQL Server 2012 in Windows Azure Database, SQL Database, that can work with the compat level 10.0, because we are not upgrading yet to 11.0 in the context of Azure. So let me show you what that means. We basically have added all the methods that were missing, also in Azure. We added some new capabilities that we added in 2012. We have the aggregators available in the cloud now. And many of the performance improvements, like, for example, the new SRID, the persistent computed column, the nearest neighbor query plan that I showed you, is available now. What is not available is, for example, the new indexing scheme, because that needs a backwards compatibility level. So to conclude, and to have some more time for questions or heading down towards the community ask the expert kind of event that we have down here, is that basically SQL Server really gives you a comprehensive, simple-to-use spatial offering. It gives you two data types that you can use to basically capture all your two-dimensional data needs, and we have a lot of operations on it. You can build the applications efficient using spatial indexing, and we have a lot of industry integration with all our partners. I mentioned quite a few of them earlier, And we also have this external library that you can use to even build your own spatial solutions using .NET and integrate it with the data that you get out of SQL Server as well. So the related content is, I have a couple of more deeper, longer kind of session slides up on SlideShare. We also have a tuning spatial point data queries in SQL Server 2012 white paper that we recently published based on some customer engagements we had. We have the, of course, spatial forum. I'm also adding Ed's blog here because he has lots of tons of cool information there. And you can find me tomorrow at the booth, later tonight at the Ask the Expert session downstairs, or on Twitter or on email. So if you have any more questions, I think we have still about 10 minutes for questions. I'm more than happy to answer. Yes? Okay, the question was, has spatial data type been added to analysis services? And the answer to that is no, not yet. It is added to reporting services in 2008 R2. The new PowerView does not support spatial yet, but as far as I know, they are working on that, and hopefully it will come within a certain amount of time. Yes? Yes. So three-dimensional support, we are, if you give me a three-dimensional object with a C value, we store the C value for you, and we'll give it back to you if you request the object. But we are not using the elevation for doing any of our operations. So we cannot do line of sight operations ourselves. We are not giving you distances that take elevation into account and so on. And we were planning on doing that, but the problem is three-dimensional data becomes quite complex once you get into like terrain maps and so on. And we wanted to make it accessible for people like me that are not somebody with a PhD in geodetic data management. And that's unfortunately a little bit difficult to do, so we are working on that and trying to figure out how to do that best. Yes?
So,
yes. Okay, the question was, what is the impact of if you say that you take the bounding box of your whole universe, what impact does it have on your spatial queries? And what it basically does is it means that more objects are being allocated in the innermost cell because innermost cells are growing because they're in proportion to your bounding box. And so that means that if you have lots of point data or lots of like small area kind of queries, what will happen is that you will have lots of false positives that you will have to compare to. So you will basically have lots of second step query operations that you have to apply, which means that the query will get slower. So one thing that I normally recommend is that you take your spatial data, and if you have different types of query windows in different places, I recommend that you are defining several indices for that are kind of a little bit bigger than the query window that you're expecting in those areas, like metropolitan area here down in Orlando and New York and Seattle and San Francisco, and then basically hint the window appropriate bounding box index. You will have to hint it because the optimizer will not know that your query window will be in New York or in Seattle, so it will probably choose the wrong one, but if you hint it, you can basically get the right kind of locality and will get the right performance. Is that answering your question? No, hinting your index was available in 2008. Not hinting the query window selling thing that is new. Yes? So you basically, do we have tools that draw them? Well, one tool you have seen in SSMS, which kind of draws you the results in the SSMS window. The other thing is reporting services now has a map control feature as well. So the standard reporting services, not PowerView, has the ability to visualize that. And otherwise, most of the data, if you take well-known text or so, many of our partners like Pitney Bowes, ESRI, et cetera, take the data out and they can visualize it in their kind of high-end visualization tools as well. Is that answering the question? So how to move the data depends a little bit. For example, ESRI, ArcGIS, they have a SQL Server connection. MapBit from ESRI has that. Pitney Bowes has that, et cetera. So many of these tools now understand the SQL Server format and can visualize it. If they don't, you can use one of these three standard serialization formats, well-known text, well-known binary, or GML, and serialize it out, and then hopefully one of these three formats is understood by the tool that you're getting. And if all that doesn't help, then you basically would have to write some code using the spatial library on the client side. Yes? Okay. So that's a little bit going beyond the presentation here. So the question was, do we, for example, make use, or are we planning on making use of GPUs to optimize spatial queries and potentially even other queries?
Or the end user.
Well, the end user can do whatever he wants if he writes code, but it would be outside the database. Or even maybe if you have safe libraries, you could do it inside the CLR. But in terms of query optimizer, at the moment we don't. And the reason for that is, of course, there's lots of complexity around understanding exactly where to go to. If we see cases where we can't deliver the performance and the GPU-based approach would allow us to be orders of magnitude faster, I'm sure that we would be starting thinking about how to do that. But at the moment we don't. Yes? Yeah. So the free download is something that somebody in our community did.
Yeah.
Just showing, one thing I wanted to show with that is how easy it is to build stuff just using our spatial library. Yes, the thing is, that's an interesting story and probably best elaborated over a couple of beers. But the official line is that we leave that environment to our partners, like Safe Software, et cetera. And there's some beer line that I can give you as well, but it's not for recording. Okay, any other questions? If not, I thank you very much for your attention and sticking around until past 6 today. As a reminder, we have the community event, I think, downstairs, where you can come and talk to all of the product guys and speakers, et cetera, and ask your additional questions. Thank you very much, and have a great rest of conference. Don't forget to fill out all this elevation, etc., and everything that is bad, please don't fill in. I only want to see good marks. I'm just kidding.